grim faces, though. They could not be enjoying the thought of a confrontation with Aes Sedai, and not for fear of the power. However Malayne and the other wise ones might speak of them now, most Aiel had that ancient failure of the Aiel firmly fixed in their heads. Bashir was not there, of course. He and his wife were out at one of Bashir's training camps, and neither were any of the Andron nobles who flocked around the palace. Rand was sure that Naon and Elenia and Lur and that entire lot would have learned of this gathering as soon as it began. They never missed an audience from the throne unless he sent them away. Their absence could only mean that on their way to the Grand Hall they had learned the reason, too, and that meant the Aes Sedai were already in the palace. Indeed, Rand had no sooner seated himself on the dragon throne with the dragon scepter on his knee than Mistress Harfor scurried into the Grand Hall, looking flustered, quite unusual for her. Staring at him and all the Aiel with equal amazement, she said,
"I sent servants everywhere to find you. There are Aes Sedai."
That was as far as she got before seven Aes Sedai appeared in the wide doorway. Rand felt Luz Theron reaching for Saidin, touching the Angreal, but Rand took hold of it himself, holding that raging torrent of fire and ice, filth and sweetness, as hard as he did the piece of Seanchan's spear.
"Seven," Luz Theron mumbled darkly. "I told them three, and seven come. I must be cautious. Yes, cautious."
"I said three," Rand snapped back at the voice. "Me, Randall Thor."
Luz Theron fell silent, but then the distant muttering began again. Glancing from Rand to the seven women in their fringed shawls, Mistress Harfor apparently decided between was no place to be. The Aes Sedai received her first curtsy, Rand the second, and she walked with a good show of calm to one side of the doorway. When the Aes Sedai entered, though, forming a line abreast, she did slip out behind them with just a touch of haste. On each of her three visits, Mirana had brought different Aes Sedai, and Rand recognized all but one of these, from Faeldrin Harella on the right, her dark hair in a multitude of thin braids worked with brightly colored beads, to stout Valinda Nathanos on the left in her white-fringed shawl and white dress. They were all clothed in their Aja colors. He knew who the one he did not recognize must be. That coppery skin made the gracefully beautiful woman in dark bronze silk, Damira Arif, the brown sister whom Minid reported had taken to her bed. But she stood in the center of the line, a pace ahead of the others, while Mirana stood between Faeldrin and plump, round-faced Rafella Sindal, who looked even more serious today than she had when he saw her with Mirana 6 days ago. They all looked very serious. For one moment they paused, looking at him impassively, ignoring the Aiel. Then they glided forward, first Demira, then Sionid and Rafella, then Mirana and Masuri, forming an arrowhead pointed straight at Rand. He did not need the faint tingle in his skin to tell him they had embraced Sidar. With every step, each woman appeared noticeably taller than before.
"They think to impress me, spinning the mirror of mists?"
Luz Theron's incredulous laugh faded into mad giggles. Rand did not need the man's explanation. He had seen Moraine do something like this once. Osmodian had called it the mirror of mists, too, and also illusion. Malayne shifted her shawl irritably and sniffed loudly, but Bale suddenly looked as if he were facing, all alone, a charge by hundreds. He meant to stand against it, but he did not expect any good outcome. For that matter, some of the maidens stirred until Nandera glared at them over her veil, and that did not stop the soft sound of shifting feet from the Aiel among the columns. Damira Arif began to speak, and plainly channeling was involved there, too. She did not shout, but her voice filled the grand hall, seeming to come from everywhere.
"Under the circumstances, it was decided that I should speak for all. We intend you no harm here today, but the strictures we accepted before, that you would feel safe, we must now reject. Obviously, you have never learned the respect due Aes Sedai. You must learn it now. Henceforth, we shall come and go as we please, saving only that at our choice we will still inform you first in the future when we wish to speak with you. Your Aiel watchers around our inn must be removed, and no one is to watch or follow us. Any future insult to our dignity will be punished, though those we must punish are his children, and you will be responsible for their pain. This is how it must be. This is how it shall be. Know that we are Aes Sedai.
As that long arrowhead halted before the throne, Rand noticed Mullane glancing at him, frowning, no doubt wondering whether he was impressed. If he had not some notion of what was happening, he would have been. He was not sure he was not anyway. The seven Aes Sedai stood twice as tall as Loyal, maybe more, heads nearly halfway to the vaulted ceiling with its colored glass windows. Dimira gazed down at him, cool and dispassionate, as if she might be contemplating picking him up in one hand, which she appeared big enough to do. Rand made himself lean back casually, his mouth tightening when he realized that it had taken an effort, if not very great. Luz Theron chittered and screamed, but in the distance, something about not waiting, striking now. She had laid emphasis on certain words, as if he should understand the significance. Under what circumstances? They had accepted the restrictions before. Why were they suddenly a breach of respect? Why did they suddenly decide that far from needing to make him feel safe, they could threaten?
The Tower emissaries in Kyrian accept the same constraints as you, and do not seem offended.
Well, not very offended.
Instead of vague threats, they offer gifts.
They are not us. They are not here. We will not buy you.
The contempt in Demira's voice stung. Rand's knuckles ached from his grip on the dragon scepter. His anger had an echo from Luz Theron, and suddenly he realized the man was struggling again to reach the source.
Burn you, Rand thought.
He meant to shield them, but Luz Theron spoke, panting in near panic.
Not strong enough. Even with the Angreal, maybe not strong enough. Not to hold seven. You fool, you waited too long. Too dangerous.
Shielding anyone did take a fair amount of strength. With the Angreal, Rand was sure he could make seven shields, even with them embracing Sayadar already. But even if one could break that shield, or more than one... He wanted to impress them with his strength, not give them a chance to overcome it. But there was another way. Weaving spirit, fire, and earth just so, he struck almost as if intending to shield. Their mirror of mists shattered. Suddenly, there were only seven normal women standing in front of him with stunned faces. Shock vanished behind Aes Sedai tranquility in an instant, however.
You have heard our requirements, Dimira said in a normal voice, but a commanding one, just as if nothing had happened at all. We expect them to be met.
Rand stared in spite of himself. What did he have to do to show them he would not be browbeaten? Sidene raged in him, a boiling fury. He did not dare release it. Luz Theron was screaming maniacally now, trying to claw the source out of his grip. It was all he could do to hold on. Slowly he stood. With the extra height of the dais, he towered over them. Seven unruffled Aes Sedai faces looked up at him.
The restrictions stand, he said quietly. And one more requirement of my own. From now on, I expect to see the respect I deserve from you. I am the Dragon Reborn. You may go now. The audience is at an end.
For perhaps 10 heartbeats they stood there, not even blinking, as though to show they would not move a single slipper at his command. Then Dimira turned without so much as a nod of her head. As she passed Sionid and Rafella, they fell in behind her, and the others in turn, all gliding smoothly, without hurry, across the red and white tiles, and out of the grand hall. Rand stepped down from the dais as they vanished into the corridor.
"The Karakhan handled them well,"
Mullane said, loudly enough to be heard in every corner.
"They must be taken by the scruff of the neck and taught honor, though they weep for it."
Bale did not manage to hide his discomfort, hearing Aes Sedai spoken of so.
"Perhaps it is the way to handle wise ones, too?"
Rand asked, managing a smile. Mullane lowered her voice, shifting her shawl emphatically. "Do not be a complete fool, Randall Thor." Bale chuckled, though his wife glared at him. At least he had brought a chuckle. Rand did not feel the humor of the small joke, though, and not because of the buffering of the void. He almost wished he had let Min come. There were too many undercurrents here he could not understand, and he was afraid there were some he did not even see. What were they really after?
Closing the small door of the dressing room, Min leaned back against a dark, lion-carved wall panel and drew a very deep breath. Fael had come for Perrin, and however much Loyal had protested that Rand wanted her to stay there, he had crumpled before the simple truth that Rand had no right to make her stay anywhere. Of course, if Loyal had had any idea what she intended, he might have tucked her under his arm, quite gently, of course, and sat there in the courtyard reading to her. The thing was, while she had heard everything, she had not seen very much, aside from Aes Sedai towering over throne and dais. They must have been channeling, which did tend to obscure the images and auras, but she had been so astounded she would not have noticed had any been present. By the time she recovered, they were no longer towering, and Demira's voice no longer boomed from every angle. Chewing her underlip, she thought furiously. There were two problems as she saw it. First, Rand and his demands for respect, whatever he meant by that. If he expected Mirana to curtsy with her head to the floor, he was going to have a long wait, and in the meantime he had surely put their backs up. There had to be some way she could smooth that over, if she could just see how. The second problem was the Aes Sedai. Rand seemed to think this was some sort of snit that he could end by putting his foot down. Min was not certain Aes Sedai had snits, but if they did, she was sure this was something more serious. The only place to find out, though, was the Crown of Roses. Reclaiming Wild Rose at the forecourt stable, she trotted the bay mare back to the inn and handed her over to a big-eared stableman with a request that the horse be rubbed down well and fed some oats. Her gallop to the palace had been just that, and Wild Rose deserved a reward for helping spike Mirana and the others' scheme. From the cold fury in Rand's voice, she was not certain what would have happened had he suddenly learned out of a clear sky that seven Aes Sedai were awaiting him in the Grand Hall. The common room of the Crown of Roses looked almost the same as when she had scuttled out through the kitchens earlier. Warders sat about at the tables, some playing dominoes or stones, others tossing dice. Almost as one, they glanced up as she entered, and recognizing her, went back to what they were doing. Mistress Sinchonine was standing in front of the wine-room door. No barrels of ale and wine stacked along the common room wall in the Crown of Roses, with her arms folded and a sour expression on her face. The warders were the only ones at the tables, and as a rule warders drank little and seldom. Any number of pewter mugs and cups stood on tables, but Min did not see one of them touched. She did see a man who might be willing to tell her a little. Mahiro Shukosa sat at a table by himself, working tavern puzzles, the two swords he usually wore on his back propped against the wall in easy reach. With graying temples and a noble nose, Mahiro was handsome in a rugged sort of way, though certainly only a woman in love would have called him beautiful. In Kandor he was a lord. He had visited the courts of almost every land, traveled with a small library, and won or lost gambling with the same easy smile. He could recite poetry and play the harp and dance like a dream. In short, except for being Rafaela's warder, he was exactly the sort of man she had liked before meeting Rand. Still liked, actually, when she could see them for thinking about Rand. Whether fortunately or unfortunately, Mahiro saw her in a way Min suspected might be peculiar to Kandor, as a sort of younger sister who occasionally needed someone to talk to, and a little advice, so she would not break her neck while sowing her wild oats. He told her she had pretty legs, would never think of touching them, and would break the neck of any man who did think of it without her permission. Deftly slipping the intricate iron pieces back together, he placed the puzzle on a stack of those already worked, and took up one from another stack as she sat down across from him. "So, cabbage," he said with a grin. "Back with your neck unbroken. not kidnapped, and not married. One day she was going to ask him what that meant. He always said it. "Has anything happened since I went out, my hero?" "You mean aside from the sisters returning from the palace looking like a storm in the mountains?" As usual, the puzzle came apart in his hands as though channeled. "What upset them?" "Althor, I suppose." The puzzle went back together just as easily and joined the pile of discards. Immediately, one from the other pile did too. "I worked that one years ago," he confided. "But how, my hero? What happened?" Dark eyes regarded her. A leopard's eyes would look like Mahiro's if they were nearly black. "Min, a yearling who puts her nose into the wrong den may have her ears bitten off." Min winced. All too true. The fool things a woman did because she was in love. "That is what I would like to avoid, Mahiro. The only reason I'm here is to carry messages back and forth between Mirana and the palace, but I walk in there with no idea what I'm walking into. I don't know why the sisters stopped meeting him every day, or why they started back, or why a whole fistful went today instead of just three. I could get more than my ears bitten, not knowing. Mirana isn't going to tell me. She doesn't tell me anything except go there, do that. Just a hint, Mahiro, please." He began studying the puzzle, yet she knew he was thinking, because the interlocked pieces shifted about in his long fingers, but nothing came loose. A motion at the back of the common room caught her eye, and she half-turned her head before her neck froze. Two Aes Sedai were coming back from the baths, by the freshly washed look of them. The last time she had seen that pair was months ago, before they were sent out from Salidar, because Shiriam had a hunch Rand was in the Aiel Waste somewhere. That was where Bera Harkin and Kiruna Nachiman had been headed. The Waste, not Camelin. Except for her ageless face, Bera would have looked like a farm wife with her brown hair cut close around a square face, but at that moment that face was set in grim determination. Kiruna, elegant and statuesque, seemed every inch exactly what she was, sister to the King of Arafel, and a powerful lady in her own right. Her large dark eyes gleamed as if she was about to order an execution and enjoy it. Images and auras flickered about them, as always around Aes Sedai and warders. One caught Min's eye when it flashed around both women at the same time, brownish yellow and deep purple. The colors themselves meant nothing, but that aura made Min stop breathing. The table was not far from the foot of the stairs, but the two women did not glance at Min as they turned to climb. Neither had ever given her more than two looks in Salidar, and now they were engrossed in their own conversation. "Alana should have brought him to heel long since." Kiruna's voice was low, yet close to open anger. "I would have. When she arrives, I will tell her so, and the Dark One take convention." "He should be leashed," Bera agreed in a flat tone. "And before he can do more damage to Andor." She was Andoran. "The sooner the better, I say." As the pair sailed up the stairs, Min realized Mahiro was looking at her. "How did they get here?" she asked, and was surprised her voice sounded perfectly ordinary. Kiruna and Bera made 13. 13 Aes Sedai. And there was that aura. "They followed word of Althor. They were halfway to Cairhien when they heard he was here. I would walk wide of them men. Their Gaideen tell me neither is in a good temper." Kiruna had 4 warders and Bera 3. Min managed a smile. She wanted to dart out of the inn, but that would raise all sorts of suspicions, even in Mahiro. "That sounds good advice. What about my hint?" He hesitated another moment, then set the puzzle down. "I will not say what is or is not, but a word in a good ear. Maybe you should expect Althor to be upset. Maybe you should even consider asking if someone else can deliver any messages. Perhaps one of us." He meant the warders. "Maybe the sisters have decided to teach Althor a small lesson in humility. And that, Cabbage, is maybe a word more than I should have said." You will think on it? Min did not know whether the small lesson was what had happened at the palace or something to come, but it all fit together. And that aura. That sounds good advice, too. Mahiro, if Marana comes looking for me to carry a message, will you tell her I am looking at the sights in the inner city for the next few days? A long journey, he chuckled, gently mocking. You will kidnap a husband yet if you are not careful. The big-eared ostler stared when Min insisted he root Wild Rose out of her stall and saddle her again. She rode out of the stable yard at a walk, but as soon as the first turning hid the crown of roses, Min dug her heels and sent people leaping from her path as she galloped toward the palace as fast as Wild Rose could carry her.
13, Rand said flatly, and just saying it was enough for Luz Theron to try seizing control of Saidin from him again. It was a wordless struggle with a snarling beast. When Min first said there actually were 13 Aes Sedai in Camelin, Rand had barely managed to seize the power before Luz Theron could. Sweat rolled down Rand's face. There were dark patches on his coat. He only had room for concentrating on one thing, keeping Saidin away from Luz Theron. A muscle in his cheek jumped from the strain. His right hand trembled. Min stopped pacing across his sitting room carpet and bounced on her toes.
It isn't only that, Rand, she said frantically. It's the aura. Blood, death, the one power. Those two women and you, all in the same place at the same time.
Her eyes were shining again, but this time tears leaked silently down her cheeks.
Karuna and Barrett did not like you. Not at all. Remember what I saw around you? Women who can channel hurting you? It is the auras, and the 13 and everything, Rand. It is too much.
She always said her viewing always came true, though she could never tell whether in a day or a year or 10. And if he remained in Camelin, he thought it might be the day. Even with only a snarling in his head to go on, he knew Luz Theron wanted to strike at Mirana and the others before they could strike at him. For that matter, the idea appealed uncomfortably to Rand. Maybe it was only happenstance, maybe his Tavirin twisting of chance had worked against him, but the fact remained Mirana had decided to challenge him on the very day the number of Aes Sedai reached 13. Rising, he strode into his bedchamber long enough to fetch his sword from the back of the wardrobe and fasten the dragon-shaped buckle. "You're coming with me, Min," he told her as he snatched up the dragon scepter and headed for the door.
"Coming where?"
she demanded, wiping her cheeks with a handkerchief. But she did follow, and he was already in the hallway. Jelani bounced to her feet a touch more quickly than Baralna, a bony redhead with blue eyes and a feral grin. With none but maidens about, Baralna would stare at him as though considering whether to do him the great favor of doing as he asked. But he gave her a sharp stare of his own. The void made his voice distant and cold. Luz Theron had subsided to muted whimpers, but Rand dared not relax. Not in Camelin. Not anywhere near Camelin. Baralna, find Nandera and tell her to meet me in Perrin's rooms, with however many maidens she wants to take. He could not leave Perrin behind, and not because of any viewing. When Mirana found Rand gone, one of them might well bond Perrin the way Alana had him. I may not be coming back here. If anyone sees Perrin or Fael or Loyal, tell them to meet me there too. Jelani, find Mistress Harfor. Tell her I need pen and ink and paper. He had letters to write before he left. His hand trembled again, and he added, lots of paper. Well, go! Go! They exchanged one look and went at a run. He headed in the opposite direction, with Min almost trotting to keep up.
Rand, where are we going?
Kyrian. With the void around him, that came out cold as a slap in the face. Trust me, Min, I won't hurt you. I will cut off my arm before I hurt you. She was silent, and he finally looked down to find her peering up at him with a strange expression.
That's very nice to hear, sheepherder.
Her voice was as odd as her face. The thought of 13 Aes Sedai coming for him must have really frightened her, and small wonder. Min, if it comes down to facing them, I promise to send you away out of danger somehow. How could any man face 13? The thought made Luz Theron surge again, screaming. To his surprise, she flourished those knives out of her coat sleeves and opened her mouth, but then slid the blades back just as smoothly, she must have been practicing, before she spoke.
"You can lead me by the nose to Kyrian, or anywhere else, sheepherder, but you better dig deep and try hard if you think to send me anywhere at all."
For some reason, he was sure that was not what she had been going to say. When they reached Perrin's rooms, Rand found quite a gathering. At one side of the sitting room, Perrin and Loyal were in shirt sleeves, cross-legged on the blue carpet and smoking their pipes with Gaul, a stone dog, Rand remembered from the fall of the stone. On the other side of the room sat Fael, also on the floor, with Bane and Chiad, who had also been at the stone. Through the open door to the other room, Rand could see Sulan changing bed linens, flinging them about as though she would rather rip them to shreds. Everyone looked up when he and Min entered, and Sulan came to the bedchamber door. There was a good bit of scrambling about once he explained about the 13 Aes Sedai and what Min had overheard. Not the viewings, though. Some in the room knew, some might not, and he was not going to tell anyone unless she did. Which she did not. And not about Luce Theron, of course. Not that he was afraid of what might happen to him in a city with 13 Aes Sedai, even if they sat on their hands. Let them think he was panicky if they wished. He was not sure he was not. Luce Theron had gone silent, but Rand could feel him, like heated eyes watching in the night. Anger and fear, and maybe panic too, crawled outside the void like large spiders. Perrin and Fael immediately began a hasty packing, and Bane and Chiad flicked fingers at one another before announcing that they meant to accompany Fael, whereupon Gaul announced that he was accompanying Perrin. Rand did not understand what was going on there, but it involved a great deal of Gaul not looking at Bane or Chiad and them not looking at him. Loyal went running off, muttering under his breath, as he thought about Kyrian being much farther from the two rivers than Camelin, and his mother being a famous walker. When he returned, he had a half-done bundle under one arm, and huge saddlebags over his shoulder, shirts hanging out. Loyal was ready to go on the spot. Sulan vanished as well, coming back with a bundle in her arms that seemed made out of red and white dresses. With her face fixed in that incongruous mildness, she growled at Rand that she had been commanded to serve him and Perrin and Fael, and only a sun-crazed lizard would think she could do that in Camelin when they were all in Kyrian. She even added a tiny "My Lord Dragon" that sounded a curse, and a curtsy, amazingly without a single wobble. The latter seemed to amaze her, too. Nandera arrived at almost the same instant as Mistress Harfor, who was carrying a writing case with several steel-nibbed pens and enough paper and ink and sealing wax for 50 letters. Which turned out to be fortunate. Perrin wanted to send word to Danil Lewin, telling him to follow with the rest of the Two Rivers men. He did not intend to leave any of them for the Aes Sedai either. And he only refrained from telling Danil to bring Bode and the other girls from Kulain's Hound, when both Rand and Fael pointed out that in the first place the Aes Sedai were not going to let them go, and in the second, it was not very likely they would want to. Perrin and she had both been to the inn more than once, and even Perrin had to admit that the girls mainly seemed impatient to get on with becoming Aes Sedai. Fael herself had two hasty letters to write, to her mother and father, so they would not worry, she said. Rand did not know which was which, but they were very different in tone, the one begun half a dozen times, then torn up, and every word frowned over, the other dashed off with smiles and chuckles. He thought that must be to her mother. Min wrote to a friend named Mahiro at the Crown of Roses, and for some reason made a point of telling Rand he was an old man, though she blushed at saying it. Even Loyal took pen in hand after some hesitation. His own pen, a human pen, would have vanished in his huge hands. Sealing his note, he handed it to Mistress Harfor with a diffident request that she deliver it personally if the chance arose. A thumb the size of a fat sausage covered most of the recipient's name, in both human script and Ogier, but with the one power sharpening his eyes, Rand noticed the name Aerith. Still, he showed no sign of wanting to wait and give it to her himself. Rand's own letters were as difficult as Fael's, but for different reasons. Sweat dripping from his face made the ink run, and his hand shook so that he had to start over more than once for ink blots. He knew exactly what he wanted to say, though. To Taim, a warning about 13 Aes Sedai, and a reiteration of his orders to stay away from them. and to Marana a different sort of warning, and an invitation of a kind. It was no use him trying to hide. Ilana could find him anywhere in the world eventually. It had to be on his terms, though, if he could manage that. When he finally sealed them, the presence of a green stone seal carved with a dragon earned Mistress Harfour a stare, which she returned with the utmost blandness. Rand turned to Nandera. "Do you have your 20 maidens outside?" Nandera's eyebrows rose. 20? Your message said however many I wanted, and that you might not return. I have 500, and would have more had I not drawn the line. He only nodded. In his head was silence, except for his own thoughts, but he could feel Luz Theron inside the void with him, waiting like a coiled spring. Not until he had passed everyone through the gateway to the chamber in Kyrian and let the hole close, cutting his sense of Ilana to that vague impression of somewhere west. Not until then did Luz Theron seem to go away. It was as if, wearied by grappling with Rand, the man had gone to sleep. At last Rand pushed Sidene away, and with that he realized how wearied he had been by the struggle. Loyal had to carry him to his rooms in the Sun Palace.
Marana sat quietly by the sitting room window, her back to the view of the street and Randall Thor's letter on her lap. She knew its contents by heart. Marana, it began. Not Marana Eyes Sedai, nor even Marana Sedai. Marana. A friend of mine once told me that in most dice games the number 13 is considered nearly as unlucky as rolling the Dark One's eyes. I also think 13 is an unlucky number. I am going to Kyrian. You may follow me as you can with no more than 5 other sisters. That way you will be on an equal footing with the emissaries from the White Tower. I will be displeased if you try to bring more. Do not press me again. I have little trust left in me. Randall Thor, the Dragon Reborn. At the end, his pen had pressed so hard that it nearly tore the paper. The last 2 lines almost seemed a different hand from the rest. Marana sat very quietly. She was not alone. The rest of the embassy, if it could still be called that, sat in chairs around the walls in various states. Irritatingly, only Berenicia sat as small as Marana, plump hands folded in her lap, head bowed slightly and grave eyes watchful. She did not say a word unless spoken to. Faeldrin sat quite proudly and spoke when she wished, and so did Masuri and Rafella. For that matter, Sionid appeared scarcely less eager, sitting on the edge of her chair and often smiling determinedly. The rest were more like Valinda, almost placid. Everyone was there except Verin and Alana, and Gaidin had been sent to find them. Kiruna and Bera, standing in the middle of the floor, were most definitely there. "That anyone could send such a letter to Aes Sedai disgusts me." Kiruna did not thunder. Her voice managed to be cool and calm and forceful all at once, but her dark eyes did provide lightning. "Dimira, can your informant confirm that Althor has gone to Kyrian?" "Traveling," Bera murmured in disbelief. "To think that he would rediscover that." The bright beads in Faeldrin's braids clicked as she nodded. "We can think of no other thing it can be. It will be well to remember that he is perhaps more powerful even than Loghain or Mazrim Taim, yes?" "Can nothing be done about Taim?" Rafella's round face, normally mild and pleasant, was quite stern, and her usually sweet voice flat. "There are at least 100 men who can channel. 100, not 20 miles from where we sit." Karen nodded resolutely, but did not speak. "They must wait," Kiruna said firmly. "Light and honor, I do not know how many sisters will be required to handle so many. Althor is the important matter, and one we can handle. Dimira?" Dimira had waited for the others to finish, of course. With a slight bow of her head, she said, "I know only that he is gone, apparently with a large number of Aiel, and possibly with Perenay Barra as well." Verin had slipped into the room as Dimira began, and she added, "There can be no doubt of Perrin. I sent Tomas to look at the Two Rivers men's camp. It seems they have sent 2 men to the palace for Perrin's horse and his wife's. The rest have left the wagons and servants and are already riding east as hard as they can go. behind Perrin's wolf head and the red eagle of Manatheron. A faint smile curved her lips as though she found that amusing. Karen plainly did not. She gasped, then clamped her mouth shut in a hard line. Mirana did not find it amusing either, but it was such a small thing compared to the rest. A faint whiff of something spoiled when you already sat on a midden heap. A dog snarling at you when wolves already had hold of your skirts. To think that she had worried so over Varen, struggled so hard. Varen had hardly touched her own plans, really, except for guiding Demira into suggesting today's unfortunate confrontation. It had been done quite skillfully. Mirana did not believe anyone but a Grey would have noticed. Yet she herself had agreed even with that. Facing Althor down, trying to face him down, was the least they could have done. She had worried about Varen, and then Karuna and Bera appeared, neither with any tie to her authority, both at least as strong as Masuri or Faeldrin or Rafella. "Now that's a rotten turnip tossed in the stew," Bera muttered grimly. Karen and a number of others nodded agreement. "A small turnip," Karuna told her in a dry tone. Nearly everyone nodded except Mirana and Varen. Mirana just sighed softly. Varen watched Karuna with that bird-like gaze, her head tilted. "What is keeping Alana?" Kiruna demanded of no one in particular. "I do not want to go over everything twice." Mirana supposed she herself had begun it, deferring to Varen. She had still been the head of the delegation. Everyone still followed her orders, even Masuri and Rafella and Faeldrin, but they all knew. She was not certain yet whether Kiruna or Bera had taken charge. That one was born on a farm and the other in a palace mattered not at all. That had nothing to do with being Aes Sedai. But the one thing Mirana was sure of was that the embassy was crumbling around her. It was the sort of thing that would never have happened when the White Tower was whole, when an ambassador had the full power of the tower and the Ammerlin seat behind her, and no matter if she had taken 30 years to reach the shawl and barely had enough strength to keep from being sent away. They were only a collection of Aes Sedai now, slipping into their relative places without thought. As if speaking her name had been a summons, Alana appeared just as Bera was opening her mouth. She and Kiruna rounded on Alana together. "Althor claims to have gone to Kyrian," Bera said baldly. "Can you add anything?" Alana faced them proudly, a dangerous gleam in her dark eyes. They were speaking of her warder, after all. "He is somewhere to the east. That is all I know. It could be Kyrian." "If you had to bond a man without asking him," Kiruna demanded in that commanding voice, "why, by the light most holy, have you not used the bond to bend him to your will? Compared to the other, that is only slapping his wrist." Alana still had small control of her emotions. Color actually flooded her cheeks, partly in anger by the way her eyes flashed, and assuredly partly in shame. "Has no one told you?" she asked, too brightly. "I suppose no one wants to think of it. I certainly do not." Faeldrin and Cianid looked at the floor, and they were not the only ones. "I tried to compel him moments after I bonded him," Alana continued, as if noticing none of it. "Have you ever attempted to uproot an oak tree with your bare hands, Kiruna? It was much the same." Kiruna's only reaction was a slow widening of her eyes, a slow, deep breath. Bera actually muttered, "That's impossible, impossible." Alana threw back her head and laughed. Her eyes on her hips made the laughter seem contemptuous, which tightened Bera's mouth and brought a cold gleam to Kiruna's eyes. Varen peered at them, reminding Mirana uncomfortably of a robin peering at worms. Somehow Varen seemed to defer without deferring, though Mirana could not understand how. "No one ever before has bonded a man who can channel," Alana said when her mirth subsided. "Perhaps that has something to do with it." "Be that as it may," Bera said firmly. Her gaze was just as firm. "Be that as it may. You can still locate him." "Yes," Kiruna said. "You will come with us, Alana." Alana blinked, as though coming to herself. her head bowed slightly in acquiescence. It was time, Marana decided. If she was to hold the delegation together, this was her last chance. She stood, folding Althor's letter to give her hand something to do. "When I brought this embassy to Camelin," she began, to remind them all that she was the head, thank the light that her voice was steady, "I was given great leeway. Yet it seemed obvious what should be done, and we, to remind them they were a delegation, set about it with a fair expectation of success. Althor was to be enticed out of Camelin so that we could return Elaine and see her crowned, placing Andor firmly behind us. Slowly Althor was to be brought to trust us, that we would not harm him, and he would have been brought to show proper respect as well. Two or three of us, carefully selected, would have taken Moiraine's place, advising and guiding him, including Alana, of course. How do you know he did not kill Moiraine? Bera interrupted, as he is said to have killed Morghese. We have heard every sort of rumor concerning her death, Kiruna added. Some even say she died fighting Lanfear. Most say she was alone with Althor when she died. With an effort, Marana stopped herself from answering. If she allowed those ingrained instincts a word, they would take them all in the end. All that was in hand, she went on, when you two arrived. Only by chance, I know, and only following your instructions to find him, yet you brought our number to 13. What man of Althor's sort would not flee as fast as he could, hearing of 13 Aes Sedai together? The simple fact is, whatever damage has been done to our plans must be laid at your feet, Kiruna, and yours, Bera. She could only wait, then. If she had managed to gain any moral ascendancy at all... Are you quite finished? Bera said coolly. Kiruna was even more blunt. She turned to the others. Faeldrin, you will come with us to Cairhien, if you will. And you also, Masuri, Rafaela. Marana trembled, the folded letter crumpling in her fist. "Don't you see?" she shouted. "You talk as if we can go on as before, as if nothing has changed. There is an embassy from Elida in Cairhien from the White Tower. That is how Althor must see it. We need him more than he needs us, and I fear he knows it." For a moment shock covered every face save Varen's. Varen only nodded thoughtfully, smiling a small, secretive smile. For a moment every other face was full of wide eyes, stunned. Those words seemed to ring in the air. We need him more than he needs us. They did not need the three oaths to know it for truth. Then Bera said quite firmly, Sit down, Marana, and calm yourself. Marana was sitting before she realized it, still trembling, still wanting to shout, but sitting with her hands clutched together around Althor's missive. Kiruna turned her back deliberately. Cianid, you will come, of course. Another pair of Gaidin are always useful. And Varen, I think. Varen nodded as if it were a request. Demira, Kiruna went on. I know you have grievance against him, but we do not want to panic the man again, and someone must shepherd that extraordinary collection of girls from the Two Rivers to Salidar. You, Valinda, Karen, and Berenicia must assist Marana in that. The other four named murmured acceptance without the slightest hesitation, but Marana felt cold. The delegation was not crumbling, it was gone to dust. She trailed off as Bera's gaze turned to her, and Kiruna's, and Masuri's, and Faeldrin's, and Rafaela's as well. Gone to dust, and all her authority with it. You may find some need for a grey, she said faintly. There will certainly be negotiations, and... Words failed her again. This would never have happened when the tower was whole. Very well, Bera said at last, in such a tone that all Marana's control only just kept her cheeks from going crimson in shame. Demira, you will see the girls to Salidar, Kiruna said. Marana sat very still. She prayed that the hall had chosen an Amarlin by now. Someone very strong, in the power and in her heart. It would take another Diana, another Rashima, to make them once more what they had been. She prayed Alana led them to Althor before he decided to acknowledge Elida. Even another Rashima would not save them then.
Chapter 50. Thorns. Rand spent the rest of that day in his apartments in the Sun Palace, a good part lying on his bed, a huge thing with four square blackwood posts thicker than his leg, polished till they shone between the inlaid ivory wedges. As if to contrast with all the gilding in the anteroom and sitting room, the bedchamber furnishings were all blackwood and ivory, if no less angular. Sulin rushed in and out, fluffing his feather pillows and adjusting the linen sheet over him, grumbling that blankets on the floor were healthier, bringing him mint tea he did not ask for and punch he did not want until he ordered her to stop. "As my lord dragon commands," she growled through a sweet smile. She made her second perfect curtsy, but she still stalked out as though she might not bother to open the door. Min also stayed with him, sitting on the mattress and holding his hand and frowning until he suspected she thought he was dying. Finally he chased her out, too, long enough to put on a dark gray silk robe that he had always left in the wardrobe before. He found something else in there as well, way in the back. A narrow, plain wooden case holding a flute, a gift from Tom Marilyn in what seemed another lifetime. Sitting by one of the tall, narrow windows, he tried playing. After so long, he produced more squeaks and silences than anything else at first. It was the odd sounds that drew Min back. "Play for me," she said, laughing in delight, or perhaps astonishment, and of course settled herself on his knee while he tried with small success to produce something near a recognizable tune. Which was how the wise ones walked in on him, Amis and Bear and Soralea, and a dozen or so more. Min scrambled up quickly enough, blushing at that, tugging her coat straight, to such an extent you would have thought they had been wrestling. Bear and Soralea were at his side before he could say a word. "Look left," Soralea commanded, thumbing back his eyelid and thrusting her leathery face into his. "Look right." "Your pulse is too quick," Bear muttered, holding bony fingers against the side of his throat. It seemed that Nandera had sent a maiden running as soon as his knees gave way. It seemed that Soralea had winnowed the small army of wise ones who had intended to descend on the palace into this smaller horde. And it seemed that Soralea or no Soralea, everyone wanted her turn at the Karakarn. When she and Bear were done, her place was taken by Amis and Bear's by Kalinda, a lean woman with penetrating gray eyes, who looked short of her middle years, yet had almost as strong a presence as Soralea. But then so did Amis, of course, and any number of them. He was poked, prodded, stared at, and called stubborn when he refused to jump up and down. They really seemed to think he would. Min was not ignored while the wise ones were taking their turns with him. The others surrounded her, asking 100 questions, all about her viewings, which widened her eyes to say the least, and had her staring at them and Rand, as if wondering whether her mind was being read. Amis and Bear explained. Melaine had not been able to keep the news of her daughters to herself, and instead of growing any wider, which they probably could not at that point, Min's eyes looked ready to fall out of her face. Even Soralea seemed to accept Melaine's view that Min's ability put her on an equal footing of sorts with them, but wise ones being wise ones. Very much in the manner of Aes Sedai being Aes Sedai, she had to repeat everything nearly as many times as there were wise ones, because those fussing over him at any given time wanted to be sure they had not missed anything. Once Soralea and the rest reluctantly concluded that all he needed was rest, and departed ordering him to see that he got it, Min made herself comfortable on his lap again. "They talk in dreams," she said, shaking her head. "It doesn't seem possible. Like something out of a story." A frown creased her forehead. "How old do you think Soralea is? And that Kalinda? I saw..." "No. No, it doesn't have anything to do with you. Maybe the heat is affecting me. When I know, I always know. It must be the heat." A mischievous light appeared in her eyes, and she slowly leaned closer, pursing her lips as if for a kiss. "If you put them like this," she murmured, when they were almost touching his, "it might help.
There were bits in that last piece that almost sounded like Rooster and the Gum Tree.
It took him a moment to understand, with her eyes filling his vision, and when he did, his face must have been a sight because she collapsed on his chest, laughing. A note arrived from Koiran a short time later, inquiring after his health, wishing he was not ill and asking whether she might come to see him with two of her sisters. She offered healing, should he desire. Luce Theron stirred as if rousing from sleep while Rand read, but his vague, discontented mumbling was hardly a patch on his rage in Camelin, and he seemed to go back to sleep when Rand put the short letter down. It was a sharp contrast to how Marana had behaved, and a reminder that nothing happened in the Sun Palace at midday that Koiran did not know in full before sunset, if not sooner. He sent back polite thanks for her wishes, and a polite refusal. Out of bed or not, he still felt tired, and he wanted his wits about him when he faced any Aes Sedai. That was part of it. In that same return note, Rand also asked Gawain to visit. He had only met Elaine's brother once, but he liked the man. Gawain never came, though, and he never replied. Sadly, Rand concluded that Gawain believed the stories about his mother. That was hardly the sort of thing you could just ask a man to stop believing. It put him in such a gray humor whenever he thought of it that even Min seemed to despair of cheering him. Neither Perrin nor Loyal would stay around him when he was like that. 3 days later, another request came from Koiran, just as courteous, and a third 3 days after that. But he made excuses for those as well. In part, that was because of Alana. The feel of her was still distant and vague, but she was coming nearer by the hour. No surprise in that. He had been sure Marana would choose Alana for one of the six. He had no intention of letting Alana within a mile of him, or not within sight anyway. But he had said he would put them on an equal footing with Koiran, and he meant it. So Koiran would have to abide in patience for a little while. Besides, he was busy, one way and another. A quick visit to the school, in Barthonas's one-time palace, turned out not so quick. Idrian Tarsin was once again waiting at the door to show him all sorts of inventions and discoveries, often incomprehensible, and also the shops where various new plows and harrows and reapers were now being made for sale. But the difficulty was Herod Fell. Or maybe Min. Fell's thoughts wandered as usual, his tongue wandered after them, and he plainly forgot Min was there. He forgot her a good many times. But no sooner would Rand have the man aimed at a point than Fell suddenly noticed her for the first time again, and gave a great start. He was constantly apologizing to her for the half-smoked pipe he still never seemed to remember to light, constantly brushing ash from his stout belly, constantly smoothing his thin gray hair. Min seemed to enjoy it, though why she enjoyed a man forgetting her presence, Rand could not begin to say. She even kissed Fell on the top of his head when she and Rand rose to go, which left the man looking pole-axed. It did not help a great deal with learning what Fell had puzzled out about the seals on the Dark One's prison or the last battle. The next day brought a note crammed onto a torn-off corner of parchment. Belief and order give strength. Have to clear rubble before you can build. Will explain when see you next. Do not bring girl. Too pretty. Fell. It was a hasty scrawl with the signature jammed into the point of the fragment, and to Rand it made no sense. When he tried to reach Fell again, though, it seemed that the man had told Idrian that he felt young again and was going fishing, in the middle of a drought. Rand wondered whether the old man's wits had finally cracked. Min certainly found the note amusing. She asked if she could have it, and several times he caught her grinning over it. Cracked wits or whole, Rand decided that he would leave Min behind the next time, but in truth it was difficult to keep her at his side when he wanted her. She seemed to spend more time with the wise ones than with him. He could not understand why that should irritate him so, but he noticed a tendency to snap at people when Min was out among the tents. It was a good thing she was not with him too often. People would notice. People would talk and wonder. In Kyrian, where even the servants played their own version of the game of houses, It could be dangerous for her to have people wondering whether she was important. A good thing. He tried not to snap. What he wanted men for, of course, was to view the nobles, who began coming to him one at a time, asking after his health. Those sagging knees must have started rumors. Smiling, inquiring how long he intended to remain in Kyrian this time, what his plans were, if they might ask, smiling more, always smiling. The only one who did not smile at him so intently was Dobrain. Still with the front of his head shaved like a soldier, and the stripes across his coat worn by the breastplate he did not wear to the palace, and Dobrain was so glum in asking exactly the same questions that Rand was almost happier to see him go than any of the others. Min did manage to be at those audiences, squeezing it in between whatever she was doing with the wise ones. Rand had no intention of asking. The problem was keeping her hidden.
"I could just pretend to be your light skirt," Min laughed. "I could drape myself on you and feed you grapes. Well, raisins. I haven't seen a grape in some time. And you could call me your little honey lips. Nobody would wonder why I was there then."
"No," he snapped, and her face grew solemn.
"Do you really think the Forsaken will come after me just for that?"
"They might," he told her, just as seriously. "A dark friend like Padan Fain would, if he's still alive. I won't risk that, Min. In any case, I won't have these filthy-minded Kyrianen thinking of you that way, or the Tyrans either." The Aiel were different. They thought her teasing very funny, very amusing indeed. Min certainly was changeable. She went straight from solemn to radiant with no in-between, all smiles that hardly faded for a moment, until the audiences actually began. A paneled screen of gilded fretwork set up in the corner of the anteroom was a failure. Maringill's dark, glittering eyes avoided looking at it to such an extent that Rand knew the man would turn the Sun Palace end over end to find out who or what it hid. The sitting room turned out better, with men peeping through cracked doors into the anteroom, but not everyone showed image or aura to her eyes during the audience with him, and what she did see, there, and simply walking about in the hallways, was bleak. Maringill, white-haired and blade-slim and cool as ice, was going to die by poison. Kolaver, her more than handsome face calm and collected once she learned Avienda was not with Rand this time, would die by hanging. Mylan, with his pointed beard and oily voice, would die by the knife. The future carried a heavy toll for the High Lords of Tyr. Arakom and Marakan and Gwayam were all going to die too. Bloody deaths in battle, Min thought. She said she had never seen death so often in one group of people. By the time she saw blood covering Guayam's broad face, their fifth day in Kyrian, she felt so ill at the thought that Rand made her lie down and had Sulin bring damp cloths to lay on her forehead. This time he was the one to sit on the mattress and hold her hand. She held on very tight. She did not give up her teasing, though. The two times he could be absolutely sure she would be there were when he practiced the sword, dancing the forms with four or five of the best he could find among the Tyran and Kyrianan soldiers, and when he and Ruark or Gaul were tossing each other about and trying to kick each other in the head. Inevitably, Min ran a finger across his bare chest and made some joke about sheep farmers not sweating because they were used to having wool as thick as their sheep or the like. Sometimes she touched the half-healed, never-healing scar on his side, that circle of pale pink flesh, but differently, softly. She never made any jokes about that. She pinched his bottom, startling to say the least, when other people were about. Maidens and wise ones nearly fell over laughing every single time he jumped. Sulin looked as if she might burst from not laughing. Snuggled in his lap and kissed him at every opportunity. She even threatened to come scrub his back in his bath one of these nights. When he pretended to weep and stammer, she laughed and said it was not good enough. Min did quit quickly enough if a maiden stuck her head in to announce someone, especially Loyal, who never stayed long and talked of the royal library the whole time, or Perrin, who stayed even more briefly, and for some reason looked increasingly tired. Most especially Min leaped up if Fael happened to be with either one. The two times that happened, Min hastily found a book among those Rand had in the bedchamber, and sat pretending to read, opening it somewhere in the middle as if she had been at it for some time. Rand did not understand the cool looks the two women exchanged. It was not precisely animosity, or even unfriendliness, exactly. But Rand suspected that if either made a list of those she would just as soon not spend time with, the other's name would be prominent. The amusing thing of it was, the second time, the book turned out to be the leather-bound first volume of Darya Gahan's Essays on Reason, which he had found heavy going and intended to send back to the library the next time Loyal stopped in. Min actually went on reading for a time after Fail left, and for all her frowning and muttering, that night Min took it back to her own rooms in the guest apartments. If cool disinterest reigned between Min and Fail, between Min and Berylaine, animosity was not in it. When Samara announced Berylaine on the second afternoon, Rand put on his coat, strode into the anteroom, and took the tall gilded chair on the dais before telling Samara to admit her. Min was slow in reaching the sitting room, though. Berylaine swept in, as beautiful as ever, in a soft blue dress cut as deeply as ever, and her eyes fell on Min in her pale rose coat and breeches. For several long moments, Rand might as well not have existed. Berylaine openly eyed Min up and down. Min forgot about the sitting room. She put her hands on her hips and stood there, with one knee bent, studying Berylaine just as openly. They smiled at each other. Rand thought the hair on his head would stand up when they did that. He was minded of nothing so much as two strange cats who had just discovered they were shut up in the same small room. Apparently deciding there was no point hiding now, Min walked. Undulated would have been a better word. She managed to make Berylaine's way of walking look like a boy's, and sat with one knee over the other, still smiling. Light how those women did smile. At last Berylaine turned to Rand, spreading her skirts wide and bending low. He heard Luce Theron humming in his head, enjoying the sight of a very beautiful woman who was more than generous in displaying her charms. Rand appreciated what he was seeing, too, despite wondering whether he should look away at least until she was erect again. But he had put himself on the dais for a reason. He tried to make his voice both reasonable and firm. "Ruark let slip that you were neglecting your duties, Berylaine. It seems you hid away in your rooms for days after I was last here. I gather he had to speak to you severely to make you come out." Ruark had not actually said so, but that had been the impression. Crimson bloomed in her cheeks, suggesting Rand had the right of it. "You know why you are in charge here and not him. You're supposed to listen to his advice, not leave everything to him. I don't need Kyrianen deciding to rebel because they think I've put an Aiel to rule them."
"I was concerned, my lord dragon." Despite the hesitation and the red cheeks, her voice was composed. "Since the Aes Sedai came, rumors grow like weeds. May I ask, who do you mean to rule here?"
"Elaine Trakand, the daughter heir of Andor, the queen of Andor now. Soon, at least." "I don't know what rumors you mean, but you worry about putting Kyrian straight, and let me worry about the Aes Sedai. Elaine will be grateful for what you do here." Min sniffed quite loudly for some reason.
"She is a good choice," Berylaine said thoughtfully. "The Kyrianen will accept her, I think, perhaps even the rebels in the hills."
That was good to hear. Berylaine was astute at judging political currents, maybe as good as any Kyrianen. She took a deep breath, making Luce Theron's hum pause.
"As for the Aes Sedai, rumor says they have come to escort you to the White Tower."
"And I said, leave the Aes Sedai to me." It was not that he mistrusted Berylaine. He trusted her to rule Kyrian until Elaine took the Sun Throne. He even trusted her not to have any ambitions for the throne herself. But he also knew that the fewer who were aware he had any plan at all regarding the Aes Sedai, the less chance that Corrin would learn he had a thought beyond her gold and jewels. As soon as the doors closed behind Berylaine, Min sniffed again. Actually, it was more of a snort this time. I wonder she bothers to wear any clothes at all. Well, she'll be snubbed up sooner or later. I saw nothing of any use to you, just a man in white who will make her fall head over heels. Some women have no shame at all. That very afternoon, she asked him for coin to engage a whole roomful of seamstresses, since she had come away from Camelin with only what she stood in. And they proceeded to produce a stream of coats and breeches and blouses in silks and brocades of all colors. Some of the blouses seemed quite low-cut, even beneath a coat. Some of the breeches he was not sure how she could get into. She also practiced throwing her knives every day. Once he saw Nandera and Anila showing her their way of fighting with hands and feet, which differed significantly from how the men did it. The maidens did not like him watching and refused to go on until he left. Maybe Perrin would have understood it all, but Rand decided for the 1,000th time that he himself did not understand women, and never would. Every day Ruark came to Rand's apartments, or Rand went to the study Ruark shared with Berelaine. Rand was pleased to see her hard at work over reports of grain shipments and resettlement of refugees and repairs to damage from what some Carianan were calling the Second Aiel War, in spite of every effort to name it the Shido War. Ruark claimed to have decided to ignore the Carianan playing, as he called it, at Giotto, though he still grumbled every time he saw a Carianan woman with a sword, or young men and women garbed all in white. The rebels still seemed to be sitting in the hills waiting, their numbers growing, but they did not concern him either. What did concern him were the Shido, and how many spears still moved south each day toward Tyr. Scouts, those who returned, reported the Shido stirring in Kinslayer's dagger. There was no sign of which direction they intended to move or when. Ruark actually mentioned the number of Aiel who still gave way to the bleakness and tossed down their spears, the number who refused to put off Gaishine White when their time was done, even those few who still headed north to join the Shido. It was a sign of his unease. Surprisingly, Savanna had been in the tents, even in the city itself, leaving the day after Rand arrived. Ruark only mentioned it in passing. "Would it not have been better to seize her?" Rand asked. "Ruark, I know she is supposed to be a wise one, but she can't be, the way I understand it. I'd not be surprised if the Shido turned reasonable without her."
"I doubt that," Ruark said dryly.
He was seated on one of his cushions against the study wall, smoking his pipe.
"Amis and the others pass looks between Savannah's back, but they receive her as a wise one. If the wise ones say Savannah is a wise one, then she is. I have seen chiefs I would not waste a water skin on if I stood between 10 pools, but they are still chiefs."
Sighing, Rand studied the map spread on the table. Ruark truly did not seem to need it. Without looking, he could name any feature of the terrain the map showed. Berelaine sat in her high-backed chair on the other side of the table, her feet curled up beneath her, and a sheaf of papers on her lap. She had a pen in her hand, and an ink jar stood on the small table beside her chair. Every so often she glanced at him, but whenever she saw Ruark looking, she would bend her head over the reports again. For some reason, Ruark frowned whenever he looked at her, and she always blushed and firmed her jaw stubbornly. Sometimes Ruark looked disapproving, which made no sense. She was taking care of her duties now. "You will have to stop sending spears south," Rand said at last. He did not like it. It was vital that Samael see the biggest hammer in the world coming at him, but not at the cost of having to root the Shido out of Kyrian again. "I don't see any other way." The days passed, and everyone filled somehow. He had smiling lords and ladies so cordial to one another that he was sure they were scheming against each other beneath the surface. Wise ones counseled him on how to deal with Aes Sedai, whether from the tower or Saladar. Amis and Bear made Mylaine appear mild. Soralia made his blood run cold. Young Carianan rioted in the streets against Ruark's ban on dueling. Ruark handled it by giving them a taste of what it was really like to be made Gaishine. Sitting naked in the sun all day under guard quenched their ardor somewhat, But Ruark was not about to go against custom so far as to put wetlanders in white, and those the Red Shields had caught actually began to swagger over the affair. Rand overheard Salanda telling another young woman with a sword and her hair cut short, in a very self-important tone, that the other woman would never truly understand Giotto until she had been captive to Aiel. It was uplifting, whatever that was supposed to mean. But despite Shido and nobles, wise ones in riot, despite wondering whether Fel was ever going to come back from fishing, those days seemed pleasant, refreshing. Maybe it was just because he had been so tired on arrival. And maybe it really was only by comparison with those last hours in Camelin. Yet it did seem that Luz Theron was quieter. Rand even found himself enjoying Min's teasing enough that once or twice he had to remind himself that it was only teasing. By the time he had been 10 days in Kyrian, he thought this would not be such a bad way to spend the rest of his life. Of course, he knew it could not last. For Perrin, those 10 days were not pleasant at all. Before very long, he sought Loyal's company, but Loyal had found a paradise in the Royal Library, where he spent the better part of every daylight. Perrin liked to read, and he might have enjoyed those seemingly endless rooms full of books to their high-vaulted ceilings, but an Aes Sedai haunted those rooms, a slender, dark-haired woman who seldom seemed to blink. She did not appear to notice him, but he had not been particularly trusting of Aes Sedai even before events in Camelin. With Loyal's company largely denied to him, Perrin went hunting a great deal with Gaul, and a few times with Ruark, who he had met in the stone and liked. Perrin's problem was his wife, or maybe it was Berylaine, or both. If Rand had not been so busy, Perrin would have asked his advice. In a general sort of way, Rand knew women, but there were things a man simply could not talk about right out. It began that very first day, when he had been in Kyrian scarcely long enough to be shown to rooms in the Sun Palace. Fael went off with Bane and Chiad to explore, and he was stripped to the waist in washing, when he suddenly smelled perfume, not heavy, but strong to his nose, and a warm voice behind him said, "I always did think you must have a beautiful back, Perrin." He spun around so fast he nearly knocked over the washstand. "I hear that you have come with a wife." Verlaine stood in the door to the sitting room, smiling. Yes, he had. A wife who would not be pleased at finding him alone and shirtless with any woman wearing that dress. Especially not the first of Mayenne. Tugging his shirt over his head, he told Berylaine that Fael was out, that he did not know when she would be back for visitors, and put her out into the hall as fast as he could, without picking her up and tossing her. He thought it was done with. Berylaine was gone, and he had managed to call Fael wife 6 times in as many sentences, and say how much he loved her twice. Berylaine knew he was married, knew he loved his wife, and that should have been that. When Fael returned a short time later, she took 2 steps into the bedchamber and began radiating the smells of jealousy and rage, prickly and knife-sharp, a blend that should have made his nose bleed. Perrin did not understand. He could still smell Berylaine's perfume, but his sense of smell was nearly as acute as a wolf's. Surely Fael could not. It was very strange. Fael smiled. Not one untoward word passed her lips. She was as loving as ever, and even more fierce than usual, raking deep furrows into his shoulders with her fingernails, which she had never done before. Afterwards, examining the bleeding gouges by lamplight, she nipped his ear between her teeth, not at all lightly, and laughed. "In Saldea," she murmured, "we notch a horse's ears. But I think that will do to mark you." And the whole while she fairly reeked of jealousy and rage. If that had been all, matters would have settled down. Fael's jealousy might flare up like a forge fire roaring in a high wind, yet it always died just as fast as it caught, once she realized there was no cause. The very next morning, though, he saw her talking to Berylaine down the corridor, both smiling to beat anything. His ears caught the last thing Berlane said before she turned away.
I always keep my promises.
An odd remark to send that acrid, thorny smell leaping from Fael. He asked Fael what promises Berlane was talking about, and maybe that was a mistake. She blinked. She did forget his hearing sometimes, and said,
I really do not remember.
She's the sort of woman who makes all sorts of promises she cannot keep. His shoulders got a second set of furrows, and it was not even mid-morning. Berlane began stalking him. He did not think of it that way at first. The woman had flirted with him once in the Stone of Tyr, in a mild sort of way, not really meaning anything, he was sure, and she knew he was married now. It was only a series of chance encounters in hallways, it seemed, a few innocuous words almost in passing. But after a while he knew either his being Tavirin was twisting chance completely out of shape, or Berlane was arranging matters, unlikely as that seemed. He tried telling himself that was ridiculous. He tried telling himself he must think he was handsome as Will Alcyon. Will was the only man he had ever seen women chase after. They certainly never had after Perrin Ibarra. There were just too many of those chance encounters, though. She always touched him. Not blatantly, just fingers on his hand for a moment, on his arm, his shoulder. Hardly worth noticing. The third day, a thought occurred that made the hair on the nape of his neck rise. When you were taming a horse that had never been ridden, you began with light touches, until the animal knew your touch would not hurt, until it stood still for your hand. After that came the saddle cloth, and later the saddle. The bridle was always last. He began to dread the scent of Berlane's perfume wafting around a corner. He began to head in the opposite direction at the first whiff. Only he could not give every moment to watching for it. For one thing, there seemed to be a great many swaggering young Carianan fools going in and out of the palace, most of them women. Women carrying swords. He walked around any number of men and women, who planted themselves deliberately in his path. Twice he had to knock a fellow down when the idiot simply would not let him walk around, but kept dancing back in front of him. He felt bad about that. Carianan were nearly all considerably smaller than he, but he could not take chances with a man who had his hand on his sword hilt. Once a young woman tried that, and after he took her sword away, she made a nuisance of herself until he gave it back, which seemed to shock her. Then shouted after him that he had no honor until some maidens let her off, talking to her fiercely. For another thing, people knew he was Rand's friend. Even had he not arrived as he did, some of the Aiel and Tyrans remembered him from the stone, and word spread. Lords and ladies he had never seen in his life introduced themselves in hallways, and Tyran high lords who had stared down their noses at him in Tyr addressed him like an old friend in Cairhien. Most smelled of fear, and an odor he could not put a name to. They all wanted the same thing, he realized. I'm afraid the Lord Dragon doesn't always take me into his confidence, m'lady, he said politely to a cold-eyed woman named Colliver. And when he does, you wouldn't expect me to break that confidence. Her smile seemed to come from a great height. She seemed to be wondering how he would skin out from a lap rug. She had a strange smell, hard and smooth and somehow high. I don't really know what Rand intends to do, he told Mylan. The man very nearly repeated his no-staring, for all he smiled nearly as much as Colliver. He had the smell, too, just as potently. Maybe you should ask him. If I did know, I'd hardly talk it all over the city, he told a white-haired weasel with too many teeth, a fellow called Marengil. By then he was growing tired of attempts to milk him. Marengil also gave off the smell, every bit as heavily as Colliver or Mylan. They three carried it far more than anyone else. A dangerous smell, he knew in his bones, like a dry mountaintop before an avalanche. Between keeping an eye out for young idiots and having that smell in his nose, he could not recognize Berylaine's scent until she had crept close enough to pounce. Well, truth to tell, she glided up along the hallways, a swan on a smooth pond, but it certainly felt like being pounced on. He mentioned Fail more times than he could count. Berylaine did not seem to hear. He asked her to stop. Berylaine asked him, whatever did he mean? He told her to leave him alone. Berylaine laughed and patted his cheek and asked what she was to stop doing. Which, of course, had to be the exact moment that Fail came out of the next crossing corridor, just the instant before he jerked back. It must have seemed to Fail that he moved away because he saw her. Without a moment's hesitation, Fail turned smoothly on her heel, her pace not a whit slower or faster. He ran after her, caught up, and walked alongside in pained silence. A man could hardly say what he had to say where people could hear. Fail smiled quite pleasantly all the way back to their rooms, but oh, that thorny, thorny, thorny scent in his nose. "That wasn't what it looked like," he said as soon as the door was closed. Not a word out of her. Her eyebrows just rose in a silent question. "Well, it was." Berylaine patted my cheek. Still smiling, but eyebrows lowered darkly and sharp anger among the thorns. "But she just did it. I didn't encourage her, Fail. She just did it." He wished Fail would say something. She only stared. He thought she was waiting, but for what? Inspiration took him by the throat, and as so often seemed to happen when he was talking to her, put a noose around it. "Fail,